Cat Mayo Hour.
Welcome to the Pat Mayo Hour, talking to you on a Monday, updating the rankings a little bit because of injuries and going over the biggest news and notes from the weekend. Joining me on the line will be Jake Seeley in a second, but first I need to do some house cleaning notes. If you want the full Pat Mayo Hour on demand and free draft guide featuring some of Jake Seeley and some of a whole slew of other guests, go to facebook.com/thepme. Everything is up there right now for you to find, with links to every single show that we've done so far in 2016 for the fantasy football drafts. I mean, once we get into season, that's going to be different. Then we'll have a guide for that too on a weekly basis. Other than that, one of the biggest questions that I've been getting and one of the biggest responses, and it's not surprising because I see it come out too and I'm still somewhat jarred by it, is my ranking of Mike Evans at 5 overall. That is ahead of AJ Green, and I do want to explain that a little because people are too lazy to go and look at the other shows that have the explanation in it, some that I have done with Jake in the past. And I'll get to Jake in a second and get his response to this, but for me, I just look at a situation where, let's say you think that AJ Green is a better skilled receiver, and that's most undoubtedly true compared to Mike Evans, who's dealt with drop problems. I just think that the volume for him in that offense, with the Bucs defense being so terrible, is that he could average, I mean not average, but he could average somewhere around like 11 to 15 targets a week. And we've seen that before in certain weeks. I think the consistency comes this year and he can get around 200 overall targets, and I'm just going to bank on that upside and the opportunity that comes along with it. Now, here's the difference between the rankings and how you should actually draft. If you have pick 5 and you see Mike Evans on the board, I would be willing to take AJ Green in that spot in the hopes that Mike Evans would get back to me with my next pick. I know it's risky. There's probably, based on drafts that I've seen, an 80 to 85% chance that's going to happen, unless I'm picking at the swing pick of the 1-2 rounds, and I'm taking Mike Evans there for sure because I know he's not getting back to me. I am going to risk a player I love in Mike Evans to try to build my team up to the point where it is the best it can possibly be. If I can get the number 5 and number 6 players on my overall rankings list, I feel like I've done a pretty good job. So that is the reason that if you want to pass on Mike Evans at the number 5 pick and try to grab him on the swing around, I think that is a more savvy move to build depth on your roster and make it very top heavy with a lot of quality players. So Jake, I'm going to bring you in. That makes sense, right? What I'm trying to talk about here?
Complete sense. The thing is I'm looking at it, and DeAndre Hopkins is what I keep comparing it to for this year, and he got 192 targets last season. So to say everything you're saying, I agree 100%. And if you look at it, this is the one area where ADP kind of plays a factor, is if you're on the board, as you just mentioned, and you want one of these guys, but you can see that one of them is going 12 picks later, well, then you just know that who you can take and who you can possibly wait on to come back around. So 100%, everything you just said, I agree with. Just play it on loop for me.
Yeah, the whole thing is, and you mentioned it, knowing the ADPs, and this is going to work with every player because some players are just going higher than that. And it's no guarantee that you can get Mike Evans on the wraparound. Like, ideally, if you're going to pick in those middle rounds, hopefully you can pick 7th, Green falls to you, or Dez falls to you, and then you can probably easily scoop up Evans on the wraparound. I mean, that's a scenario which I've seen itself play out over and over. Some people, like me, are pretty high on Evans, and if they get stuck with that 11th or 12th pick in a 12-team league, they're going to take Evans with one of those or on the wraparound, then you're shit out of luck. However, I mean, that happens. I mean, we saw the leagues that we've done together where I took Evans at pick number 12 because I knew he wasn't dropping back to the third round to me, so I had to take him there, and I do want to get him on my teams. But that risk of not getting him, I do think, is worth it to try to grab two really elite players in lieu of just one.
Again, completely agree, because the fact is, hopefully we'll disagree a little bit, make for a more interesting show, but that's the fact is, if you're in that position, it's a sucky position to be in.
Agree.
If you're in that wraparound spot, that's kind of the downfall of being there. That's why I prefer to have like that 8th, 9th, or obviously a 3rd pick, but I like the 8th, 9th one, because then you can get one of those last top tier guys, and then you can still get your Evans or Alshon Jeffrey on the way back. But if you want one of them, you're just going to have to suck it up and take them in that spot, because like you said, there's no way on earth they're making it back to the 35th, 36th pick.
Yeah, we still agree that 1, 2, or 3 is the spot to pick, right?
Oh, absolutely. I love 3. I love 3 because I'll just take whichever of the 3 wide receivers is there in PPR and standard. I'll actually drop down. If I don't get 3, I also like 5, because then I can get, if I miss in the 3, I'll take Ezekiel Elliott or David Johnson, of whichever of the 2 don't go at 4.
All right, let's get to the news from the weekend. Dion Lewis, who I had ranked above Lamar Miller, not anymore, so everyone who called me an idiot, you're absolutely right. Turns out that Dion Lewis needs a second surgery on his knee, not related somehow. Apparently, I saw that from Pro Football Doc, but it's not related to the meniscus tear that he had, but he's going to be out 8 to 10 weeks. So I guess the questions that we have now is, how does this affect Dion Lewis's draft value and whether he should take him or not, LeGarrette Blount and James White? So for me, in the preliminary rankings that I've done right now that are completely updated, I have moved James White up to number 117 overall in compared to other running backs. That's with TJ Yeldon, Justin Forsett, Melvin Gordon, and Spencer Ware, like that kind of backup. I don't think that he's going to be a reliable week-to-week play, but if he's someone that you need to throw into a flex or you go zero RB, I think in PPR formats that he'll be somewhat viable. We've seen him have top 10 weeks. I think three of the final seven games last season, he was a top 10 PPR running back for that week. Now, Dion Lewis, I still only have slightly below. I have him at number 125. That's behind the Wares, Bookers, Christine Michael, Jerick McKinnon, and one spot ahead of Jordan Howard from the Bears, only because I think if you are willing to stash him on your bench, he's going to go a whole lot later than he was going now, and it looks like he will return this season. At what health? Now, I don't know. At what capacity? That's to be determined. But there's a reason I like Dion Lewis so much in the first place. I would be willing in a PPR league to have him as my 15th man, 14th man, whatever, and just to see what happens once he comes off the PUP list after week 6. Maybe he can't return to week 8 or week 9. Who knows? But I think it's worth gambling on a player that I really like, that I thought I had top 10 potential at the position in PPR leagues, just to keep around to see what happens, because now it's costing you nothing.
As long as you have an IR spot, I'm okay with it. I don't want to take up a bench spot unless I have a deep bench on him, just because it's 8 to 10 weeks. And, you know, as you said, we don't know when he's going to come back for sure. We don't know what he's going to be when he comes back for sure. But as if I have an IR spot to stash him away, I'll absolutely do that. I'm a little bit lower on James White. I have a 140 overall, 40th at running back in PPR specifically. Mostly because I know what you mentioned for those last couple of games, but those were also games without Edelman, with the Gronk in and out of the game. Who else? There was somebody else missing from those kind of games. So I'm looking at the fact that his usage when everybody was healthy was much lower. I don't think James White is quite Dion Lewis. I think I'd say I call him 80% Dion Lewis, and that's why he's at 40 instead of being at like 20 or 15 in PPR. I think this helps LeGarrette Blount a little bit more than it does anybody else, just because I think that he's now in that solid high-end flex conversation, possibly even an RB2 in standard leagues, because we already knew the touchdown potential was going to be great. But I think they turned to him a little bit more, especially because you got Garoppolo for the first four games. That's a big concern, too, is because you look at the volume of passing for the offense in general, of how many attempts versus Tom Brady versus when Garoppolo's in there. And that has to factor in a little bit, too.
I don't know about LeGarrette Blount. I don't think this really affects what he's doing whatsoever. I think that he had his role. I think without Dion Lewis, maybe he gets a few more carries, because Lewis was actually getting 6, 7, 8 carries a game for a stretch last year, and those will presumably probably go to LeGarrette Blount over James White, who is mainly just focused in the passing game. But between the two of them, I mean, I would prefer White. I just don't see a scenario which I would ever want to start LeGarrette Blount, because the touchdowns are going to be some. I could see him having 4 touchdown games this year, and then I could see him touching the ball twice for 20 yards, and that's it.
I see that concern, but that's where I think that his floor has increased a little bit, because I think that the touches will probably be in the double digits every single game now. At least that's what I feel like. I could be completely wrong with this situation. We are trying to project a Bill Belichick backfield here, so we could be all over the board. I mean, we could see them re-sign Jonas Gray, start him for 3 weeks, and cut him the next game. So who the heck knows what you're talking about this backfield? I just do. I think it adds a little bit of a higher floor, a little bit of more confidence in LeGarrette Blount, but I do think James White is worthy of being picked. I'm just not quite as high as you are on him.
Well, I think we're exactly the same spot. I have number 117 overall. I believe that's number 41 in my running back PPR ranking. So it sounds like we're about around the same. It just sounds different in context when you say the overall guys. Mainly because I don't have a whole lot of quarterbacks inside my top 115. I think there's only 10 of them or something like that inside the top 100. But what if, like, Carlos Williams was cut by the Bills at one point? Do you see him as the Patriots as a probable landing spot for him? It seems like they have a need, and I know he's suspended for the first four games, but it seems like good intel to get from a player that was previously on a team in your division.
It wouldn't surprise me, but again, it's the Patriots. It wouldn't surprise me if Darren McFadden gets cut by the Cowboys and ends up over there, because Alfred Morris has looked great, and they want Lance Dunbar to be pass-catching guy. So, I don't know. I think that the Patriots are going to sign somebody, but that's the problem. That's why I really can't get that invested in anybody in this backfield, because it's the same situation as always. It's Bill Belichick. We don't trust anybody in the backfield. We kind of threw that out the window and said, oh, you can finally trust Deion Lewis, but then he gets hurt, and we're right back in the same situation again. I actually never even had Lewis as high as you, because I still wasn't 100% sold for the fact he was coming off the injury and things had changed since he had gotten hurt. So I just go back to it's a backfield we've been avoiding for years, and I want to keep avoiding it.
Well, now that you're going to get the discount on Lewis, I am good with keeping him on my bench, even if there is no IR spot. I do believe in the talent and the impact he can make on a per-game basis in a PPR. Plus, I mean, if I have to cut him after week two because I have needs, then you have to cut him. But I think at this point of the season where, you could stash like Josh Doctson on the end of your bench, or you could stash Deion Lewis, I think I'd be better served stashing Deion Lewis right now.
See, my problem with Deion Lewis is if I did that, I would hang on for him for too long, I feel. Like, if there was somebody out there that could help my team, I'd be like, I don't know. I know what Deion Lewis could do when he comes back. I don't want to cut him. And he's one of those players that he's almost a lottery ticket, and you kind of get stuck holding on to him.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you're able to take that out of context or take that out of the situation, like, if a clear running back one pops up on the waiver wire after week three because of injury, I'd be good dropping Lewis and picking that guy up because I know he can help me immediately and potentially help me at the same time when Lewis goes. I think it depends on team needs. If you need a running back and you're still 5 weeks away from Lewis and one presents itself, well, then you got to make that move.
I understand that. I would just hope that's what you did. But see, if that's the case, that's where I'd rather get somebody who I know could break out and be by week three potentially starting for me versus somebody that I know I'm waiting half the season on. I think that's just the difference of how we build our teams.
It is. I think it relates a lot back to like what the Josh Gordon situation was 2 years ago, where I basically stashed him on every single team, waited the 8 weeks, waited for him to come back. Now, I was able to flip him in a lot of those leagues because once you get closer to the actual return date, the trade value goes through the roof because people get very excited for these people. But there was, I think, out of the like 10 teams I played that year, I think I owned Gordon in 9. I ended up having to drop him in 2 because circumstances dictated it. The rest of them I held on, and frankly, it didn't really impact my team all that much. There generally are 2 or 3 guys on your team that you can cut at any given moment.
I will definitely agree with you on that aspect.
All right, let's talk about some buzz players, guys that the fantasy community are talking about right now. They're moving up draft boards. I did this on Friday with Meany a little bit, but now we've had the weekend to digest it. Christine Michael, I still think that he's more of a backup play. He might get a split earlier in the season, but I still think that he's somewhat fantasy fool's gold. That, yeah, if there was no Thomas Rawls, sure, he'd be good. But it looks like there's going to be Thomas Rawls. Where are you comfortable drafting Christine Michael this year? Because I probably wouldn't do it until like round 10, 11, 12, and even then, I might just go for Spencer Ware instead.
Well, that's where I'm okay taking him, and it's because of the upside, and I do like him. It's just, look, it's tough to swallow. It's like, all right, all these years we've been like, oh, we want Christine Michael to be good, and oh, he's got so much potential, and he's been cut by 3 teams.
He has not yet earned being called Christine Michael, by the way. He's still Christine until he does something relevant.
All right, well, for you, I guess, I'm going to call him Kristen. I'm going to call him by his proper name. But, look, I'm willing to jump in that range because here's the thing is, we just talked about Belichick. Pete Carroll's like the inverse Belichick. He's bizarro Belichick. He actually tells you exactly what he's going to do. He says, I like this guy. I'm starting this guy. This is what we're going to do this week, and that's what they do this week. I don't get it. I don't understand why he does it, but he's very honest, and he likes Christine Michael. He said that he's deserving of a role, that even Thomas Rawls is out there, that he's going to have his share. And what I go back to, and it's why I don't like Thomas Rawls, and it's why I haven't ended up with him one league, I cannot get past the fact that he's still the RB13 off the board, is – even if he's ready by week one, we're not going to see him in the preseason. They said he should be ready by week one. A beat reporter actually finally said the same thing I have, is they don't need him to carry the ball 20 times a game with Michael, with CJ Procise, with Alex Collins, with all these guys in the backfield. They don't need to work him out there and say, all right, you are the same guy we had last year. They can work him down a couple weeks into the season before he really starts carrying the ball 20 times per game. So that's where I'm actually thinking of it I'm not drafting Rawls. Maybe I'll throw out some flyers if he starts slow in some trades. And then the inverse of that is I'll draft Kristen Michael. If he has a hot first 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to sell high and get him the heck off my team.
Like, would you rather have someone like Doug Martin, because he's – not sorry, Doug Martin, Jonathan Stewart. Jonathan Stewart keeps going like the 8th or 9th round, around like where Michael's going right now. Wouldn't you just rather have Jonathan Stewart?
Well, in that case, absolutely. I think Jonathan Stewart's pretty underrated for the fact that I think you and I have talked about him before specifically. Is that, you know, if he makes it through 16 games, which I know is almost impossible, it's like asking Ryan Matthews to do the same thing, he's going to be terrific. But in the games that he plays, he's a borderline RB1.
All right, well, try to get a sense of right now where Thomas Rawls should fall, because he's going really at the end of the 3rd round, early 4th round, even lower than that in some leagues, because this news has really kind of destroyed his value. Objectively speaking, would you rather have Rawls or Doug Martin?
Doug Martin.
Would you rather have Rawls or Jonathan Stewart?
Jonathan Stewart.
Rawls or Matt Forte?
Matt Forte, no question. He's above the other two.
That's exactly where I have him, too. I was going to ask you about C.J. Anderson, but I'll pass on that because I know the answer. Jeremy Langford or Thomas Rawls?
As of today,
I'd go Rawls.
I'd probably go Rawls just because I don't like I think we don't like Jeremy Langford. We know Mike Clay doesn't like Jeremy Langford. I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, we can get into Jeremy Langford right now because I did move him up in my ranking slightly. He's now up to RB number 24. He's on that same tier with like C.J. Anderson for me, and not you, obviously. Carlos Hyde, Ryan Matthews, Duke Johnson, Latavius Murray. The biggest knock that I had against him, I didn't really care whether he was good or not. I just thought that he'd end up in a split and maybe not get the goal line work or not be involved in the passing game. But from what we've seen so far in the preseason is that he is running almost 95% of the snaps with the first team offense, which is a pretty clear indication that he's going to get the chance to be the lead guy to start the season. I do think that's valuable if he can hang on. I don't have the highest hopes that it's going to happen, but right now I think that puts him in a more secure situation than someone like Duke Johnson, for example, or someone like Darren Sproles, even in a PPR, who I do like, and I can get at a much better value. But I think that Langford is climbing up on that tier of guys that, you know what, the talent might not be all the way there, but the opportunity right now does present itself.
And that's where we really get into fantasy, and we talk about it every year, is opportunity will trump
always
sometimes.
People say the other way, though, and I think that's ludicrous.
That talent trumps opportunity?
Yeah.
I don't think it ever really trumps it. I think it equals, but I think if anything's ever going to trump, it's going to be opportunity. As much as you need the talent to succeed, you look at Kelvin Benjamin is the perfect example for his rookie season. He can get that many targets, you can suck at catching and only catch 50% of them. But when you're doing it to that degree, you're going to have fantasy success. And we don't care about performance on the field and Pro Football Focus grades and stuff like that. We care about fantasy numbers. And if you're putting up the numbers and you're going to be Jeremy Langford, you're going to be out there for 90% of the snaps with Jay Cutler and touching the ball 25 times a game. You might only average 3 yards per carry, but it doesn't matter when you're getting 60 or 70 every single week because you're touching the ball so many times.
Over the past week, Christine Michael has jumped up 33 spots to pick number 122 overall. And another guy that is hot on his tails, and you just mentioned the corollary name that goes along with him, Devin Funches has moved up 15 spots to pick number 123. And it seems like more and more like people are buying more into Devin Funches than Kelvin Benjamin. Now, I was down on Benjamin. He's still going in the 3rd round right now, which I think is way too high. But is it worth spending like an 11th round, 10th round pick on Devin Funches, who could actually be better in fantasy this season?
I would. I actually have Devin Funches at 111, one spot behind Josh Gordon and one spot ahead of Kamar Aiken. So he is in that conversation for me because I believe basically Kelvin Benjamin was so inefficient in what he did. And Devin Funches is a very similar receiver, but he was a little bit more efficient as a rookie and has had the entire time to play. He's not coming back from the injury like Benjamin has. He doesn't have the concerns of, as we've heard, that Benjamin was gassed at times and gasping for air on the sidelines. So that's a little bit concerning, especially for somebody who's already a huge body guy. So I wouldn't be surprised. I still take, if I'm ordering the guys on the depth chart and you just told me I could have them for free, I would still take Benjamin, then Funches, then Ginn. But at the value, I'm taking Funches because, as you mentioned, Kelvin Benjamin's stock is still way through the roof, even though it seems like the entire fantasy community keeps talking about how overvalued he is.
Any other receivers you can think of that are coming in and just becoming buzz names right now? Rishard Matthews springs to mind for me.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people. I love Rishard Matthews. If you look at what he did on a per-target basis in Miami, an inefficient offense, and now he's the number one. And for anybody who was concerned about him with the obvious trade of Darrell Green Beckham, I know a lot of people are jumping on the Tajay Sharpe bandwagon, but I think that's more so if they're just trying to make sure he gets his usage and snaps and targets in before the season starts.
I actually grabbed Sharpe in a high-stakes league I'm in. It's 14 teams as the last guy on my bench. I actually cut my kicker. I cut my defense. There are no kickers in that league. I cut my defense in order to pick him up just to see how the preseason shakes itself out. Like, who knows, right?
Yeah, well, he's a starter. And there's value there, and he'll have some value in PPR leagues. But between the two, I still want Rishard Matthews.
Me too.
I have Rishard Matthews like higher than I think most. I have him at 41 for receiver, which I think is like way over the consensus. I have Sharpe higher than most too, but I'd rather have him between the two. The other one that seems to be the huge buzz that, you know, I understand, and this is from I think you've had him on the show, maybe not. Matt Harmon from NFL.com is one of his reception perception guys, is Tyler Lockett, and I understand the appeal and I understand his skill set, but my problem with him and the reason I can't buy into Tyler Lockett is because Seattle, even when they're running two wide receiver sets, just because you're the number two doesn't mean you actually are the number two on the field all the time. As we've seen in the preseason, if you watched the last game, Jermaine Kearse was in the two wide receiver sets more than Lockett, and Lockett got his share out there, but it's kind of like they're both number two. So it's the snaps. You're not going to see Tyler Lockett on the field. They don't run a ton of three wide receiver sets. It's the opportunity there. I would rather have, talent-wise, I completely agree, when have Lockett over Kearse, but the snaps aren't going to be there consistently.
No, and if you're going to take one of them, I've been in this camp. I do agree that, objectively, that Lockett has more value than Jermaine Kearse, but when it comes to actually drafting, and you need to take Tyler Lockett in the fourth round or take Jermaine Kearse in the 14th round, just give me the gamble on Kearse. Who knows, right?
Exactly. It's all about the value. You're starting to pay out the nose for the value here, well, and not getting value, and you're paying through these guys to perform is where you're drafting them. It's like, I never want to draft somebody where I just drafted them and they have to return the value I drafted them at. You gave them no room to return value for you.
People are getting real fired up for Terrell Pryor now. I made the point with Meany on Friday that I think this actually his performance in the preseason bodes really well for Josh Gordon in the types of routes that he runs and connecting, because I still think that Josh Gordon is going to be higher on the depth chart than Terrell Pryor once he returns. I mean, that's just me being crazy. Who knows? But people are getting like legit fired up for Terrell Pryor. Would you even draft him in a league? Because I don't think I would.
It would have to be an oversized league, as in bigger than your average 12-team, 16-man roster leagues. This would have to also be maybe in a best ball. I would definitely do it, because that's the biggest thing that comes down to is Robert Griffin can still sling the ball, as we've seen so far. The problem is what we know when Robert Griffin played in Washington, and what we know for all these type of receivers that are similar to Pryor, is he's DeSean Jackson. You're going to get three or four, maybe five good weeks, and the rest of the season you're going to be pissed off and annoyed. So he works well in a best ball, which is a very small percentage of the population that play it, but that's really the only place I even want to think about taking him.
Back to Jake in a sec, but first I need to tell you a little bit about Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, which proudly supports the Pat Mayo Hour. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. Hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork? With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements and pay stubs at the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your financial situation. And even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So, if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/mayo. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030. Now back to Jake. The biggest tight end moving up and getting buzz is Martellus Bennett, weirdly enough. He's gone up over 14 picks over the weekend. He's up to number 121 right now at the position. I mean, I get it. I mean, weirdly enough, Andrew Cuss was talking about keeping him on your bench in case something happens to Gronk. I don't really subscribe to that because I don't really know what his role is going to be if there's no Gronk, or even what it is with Gronk. But I know people that are rolling him out there as their starting tight end. I think that's kind of nuts.
Yep.
But like, where do you have Martellus Bennett ranked? I have him at like 16 at tight end, but like, he's not a guy I'm drafting.
I have him at 14, a little bit higher. And I'm not drafting him because he still keeps going higher than that. I'm still going to take Ertz and Witten and Dwayne Allen.
Yeah.
And even Eifert missing time. I'd rather gamble on that. I know everybody – see, the problem is everybody gets excited about the Aaron Hernandez, Rob Gronkowski days, is when Aaron Hernandez was third and Gronkowski was first.
I think people forget how good Aaron Hernandez was, as weirdly as that sounds.
I completely agree with you. That's part of it. Is Aaron Hernandez was in that classification of, you could say he was unguardable as a tight end at the NFL level. This is also an offense, if you go back and look, that didn't have 8,000 receiving options like they do today.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Although we've seen throughout the course of the years now, whether it's Edelman, whether it's Amendola, or whoever it is on the outside, they do sustain an awful lot of injuries on their offense, weirdly enough.
Hey, Edelman's already banged up. I haven't even heard about Amendola. Is he dead? Like, what happened to him?
He's doing his random Danny Amendola thing. So just do nothing, and then 1 week he'll be like, oh man, Danny Amendola had 11 catches for 71 yards, and then everyone's gonna be real fired up about Danny Amendola. On the flip side of that, Ladarius Green has fallen from pick, what is this, 96 to pick 151. Obviously, there's the concussion issues. There's the knee issue. I know you have him in our flex PPR league before some of this news came out. I heard rumors over the weekend that he was saying this is kind of a farce. What do we do with Ladarius Green? Like, I can't draft him, but I feel like there could be value there if he ends up playing.
I'll take a 13th, 14th round pick on him because, like you said, similar to like the Deion Lewis situation, I like this a little bit more. And if I have to cut him week one, look, we all know that we probably have to cut one or two of our players within the first couple weeks. It happens all the time. If you draft your entire team and hold on to it for 4, 5, 6 weeks through the season, you're probably in like a four-team league. It just doesn't happen. So with Darius Green, for the upside that he had, I originally had him inside of my top 10. I liked him more than Kobe Fleener because I'm looking at that offense.
Me too.
No Martavis. Yeah, see? No Martavis Bryant. I know what his role is going to be. Michael Thomas worries me for Kobe Fleener in that offense, but at least Darius Green, in my opinion, was going to be the third receiving option in that offense. There's still that potential if he's telling the truth and it really is only his ankle and it's not the concussions and he might not have to retire. So to throw out a pick in the 13th, 14th round for somebody that is a tight end one at worst, I think is more than well worth it.
CJ Prothith, your buddy, is the biggest faller among all running backs, and clearly Christine Michael has influenced that as well. What do we do with Prothith now? Is he someone just to pick in PPR leagues around that same sort of level that I was talking about, around Christine Michael level, around Sean Drawn, that type of player, or is he even lower than that now?
No, I would still gamble at that point because, like Rawls, he's getting back on the field this week. There's still the plenty of upside with him, and I know that Michael is pretty much ahead of him at this point. But there's been talk that Alex Collins might not make the team. So if anybody's going to get cut here, they're not going to cut Prosize. They know the talent. They invested a much higher draft pick on him. And he can be David Johnson-like, where I'm saying the fact that he's not the supreme talent that David Johnson is. He's close. He could be somebody that if you draft and stash, or, you know, maybe you don't draft, maybe you wait 3 weeks and then just pick him up when you have that empty spot on your roster, that in the second half of the season, if Rawls gets hurt again or Michael turns back into the Michael we've all known and just disappoints, that he could have that second half value, especially in PPR, where you're like, ooh, I just got an every week starter.
Tyrod Taylor is the biggest quarterback mover. He and Jameis Winston, and the biggest quarterback faller is Ben Roethlisberger, because it's about time, but he's only fallen like four picks. He's still going in the 60s, I think number 67 overall. Matt Ryan is falling down draft boards too, which is somewhat surprising because he was going so late to begin with. But between Tyrod Taylor and Jameis Winston, two buzz quarterbacks, I would prefer to have Jameis. Who would you rather have?
I'd rather prefer Tyrod. And I like both of them. I'm a big fan of both.
Now, how come you would rather go with Taylor? I would take Jameis because I think that he is going to get a little bit better. Clearly, I like Mike Evans a lot this season. And I just feel like he rushes the ball near the goal line more. And I'm more concerned about those points than overall rushing numbers.
See, I'm kind of more of the – I understand what you said. I kind of go for the he rushes the ball more, as in Tyrod does. I look at the points per game and what he had last year and the fact that he was inside the top seven. I think it was top seven or eight, or maybe he might have been eight, but I look at the fact that for what he did last year, even if you only account for the 14 games, he was still QB 16 in 14 games, and you assume somebody is going to step up, and maybe they don't, but I look at the fact of what he brings in the rushing upside, and I think this is similar to the Robert Griffin peak years, where no, he's not going to get 800, but because he's going to rush the ball 100 plus times, this season. You're going to look at 600-700 yards, and those touchdowns will be there. I am a big fan of Jameis Winston. He threw 4,000 yards and 22 touchdowns in what was supposed to be an inefficient and an inaccurate year as a rookie. So I do like it. My problem is 200 yards and 6 touchdowns. I get what you're saying and the fact that it's similar to Cam Newton. At the same time, I just worry that if he's only getting the 200 yards and it's the same as last year and he only converts half of those, that's a significant knock for the rushing. So I'm not going to yell at you and tell you you're crazy if you take Jameis. I just prefer Tyrod Taylor. I actually took him in my home league in an auction for $2, and he's my starting quarterback. I have no other quarterback.
Yeah, I would be okay with Jameis Winston as my starting quarterback too. And I agree with what you're saying, is that the natural cutting of the rushing touchdowns based on opportunity is very much in play for Jameis, even to see those slash in half. But I do think that he improves on the passing front. Again, I don't think that defense is overly great, so I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity for him to throw. And I do think that he is one of the few quarterbacks that just calls his own number near the goal line and just runs it in. And he's definitely a big enough body to do it. He's their biggest runner they have on the team, if nothing else.
Yeah, my only concern is if the coaches start telling him to chill out, only because he is only in his second year. He's the quarterback of the future. I know he's going to call his own number, but at the same time, I don't know if maybe they're chirping in his ear to take it easy this season.
Breshad Perriman might play this season, so that's good news. What do you make of the Ravens' receiving core and backfield, for that matter? Because I really feel like Steve Smith is going to be the guy, and my rankings reflect that. Again, Steve Smith ranked inside my top 55 overall. You can get him in the 12th round. That's not a problem. You can wait. And I actually think he can be a viable number three if you want to load up on running backs in those rounds, or even just take him as a flex guy, as a wide receiver five. I think that he is someone that you can start. Could be wrong on that. It could be Kamar Raikin. Maybe Perriman works his way back in. Chris Meany's boyfriend, Mike Wallace, is still in the mix somehow. And then in the backfield, you have Forsett. Kenneth Dixon seems like he's out of the equation because Terrence West has stepped in. Buck Allen's getting first-team snaps. Like, what do we do with the Baltimore Ravens?
I avoid all of them. I'll take flyers on some of them, like Steve Smith. Yeah, I feel like we're the only two that seem to be on this camp.
Good.
I argue with people all the time. But hey, yeah. I was like, if you're going to say that Adrian Peterson, you weren't discounting him coming back, he's the Adrian Peterson of wide receivers. I say this, it sounds stupid, but if anybody wants to watch how serious he takes football and how hard he's been training to come back, watch his off-season training tape. And it sounds stupid because who watches some guy just training on the field? But this guy's a madman. He is insane in the head. I don't understand him, and I don't understand how he's able to do it. But if there's one person I'm not going to count out coming back from this injury, it is Steve Smith. And I will invest on him because Perriman's 47 years old. I don't care what he says. Look at his picture. You'll see it. The fact is, he's a nine-route runner, but they have that. They brought in Mike Wallace to do the exact same thing, and Mike Wallace has been making a little bit of noise. But Kamar Aiken, I like Kamar Aiken in PPR, but he's just kind of that floor guy for me. I don't think his peak is ever going to be that high, and he's somebody who had a lot of chemistry without Joe Flacco playing, and I know he can develop with Joe Flacco. I'm just not as high as Kamar Aiken is, and if it's anybody, again, I'm going to go back to Steve Smith. The running back situation, if I was going pure talent, it would be Kenneth Dixon, but he's buried like number four on the chart now. So I actually ended up – I've been getting Justin Forsett.
Me too.
Like the 13th round. I'm like, oh, you're going to give me the guy who was the lead 2 years ago in the 13th round? I'll take it. I mean, sure, why not?
Yeah, and he might be – again, in the 13th round, if he's someone you have to cut after 2 weeks because he's not the starter, not that big of a deal anymore because you spent no draft capital to get him, and that's how I feel about Steve Smith. Steve Smith, 12th, 13th, 14th round, he's going undrafted in some places. It's not costing you anything to find out. Well, Kamar Aiken is costing you a little bit of draft capital, whether it's the 6th, 7th, or 8th round, depending on the league that you're in. I would just rather take that gamble on Steve Smith that he just walks back into the role that he has had every single second that he's been in Baltimore. I mean, even when he first got to Baltimore, too old, won't do anything. And the target share and the market share that he's seen since he's been in Baltimore has been outrageous. He's going to be inside the top 10 in targets if he ends up playing all 16 games. Now, he's an old man. That's to be seen, coming off a pretty devastating injury, so it might not work out. But again, it's costing you nothing. Who cares? Last guy, Tyler Boyd. It's reported that even if LaFell comes back healthy, he'll be the number three on the depth chart, which seems insane to me because he's looked so good in the preseason. You've talked him up. He's the only reason he's so high in my rankings because you put him on my radar. So tell me about Tyler Boyd and what you're doing with him now. Maybe this is good for his draft value.
I think it is in the fact that his draft value, I don't understand why he's not going higher. I'm obviously.
Well, let's keep it that way.
Yeah, I know. Let's keep him. I have him behind Mohamed Sanu at 53. He's 52 and 53, so he's in my top 55. He's in the same conversation as Vincent Jackson, Stephon Diggs, Terrence Williams, and as I mentioned, with Mohamed Sanu. And I think he deserves to stay there in that conversation because we've seen it. The biggest knock that anybody had on Tyler Boyd is he's not super athletic, but that I don't care. He knew how to make separation in college and use his body well, and he finds the open spots in the defense. Not every receiver has to be the specimen of talent. And if you look at it, he played with a crap quarterback situation and a crappy offense in his final year at Pittsburgh. He's great after the catch. And I just think everybody was just focusing on the negatives with him, and that's why he got overlooked. As you mentioned, it's him and Brandon LaFell. I don't buy into Brandon LaFell. 1 year with the Patriots. There's how many receivers have they turned into good people? How many players have they turned into good people for one stinking year? Ask Matt Castle.
Jake Seeley, check him out at rotoexperts.com and at allinkid on Twitter. If you're looking for his rankings, go to Pat Mayo's top 300 overall, which are PPR, and you can find Jake's standard half-point PPR and full PPR rankings linked at the bottom of that column, so you're going to want to check that out. I'm Pat Mayo. You can follow me at ThePME, and remember, go to facebook.com/ThePME for the entire 2016 Pat Mayo Hour Fantasy Football Draft Guide, all free, all on demand, so give it a like while you're there, a big thumbs up. I know you don't do Facebook, Jake, but you set up an account and do it anyway, okay?
I'll do it just for you.
I'm Pat Mayo. I'll see you next time.